This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Stop and Show. We're on the team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up at 5:30, more analysis on the Commanders offseason so far, including some guys like Dedrick Wise, Jonathan Jones. How do they fit with the Commanders? But first, let's get some guys like Laremy Tunsil and Brandon Coleman playing right tackle. From Mark Bullock, who has a great Substack and is just a really excellent analyst. So we'll talk to Mark first for Not My Beat, and then Logan Paulson coming up at 5:30. But let's get to Mark, shall we?
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Let's get some more insight on some of the Commander signings. Mark Bullock, you can read his Substack. It comes with pictures and everything. They're illustrated. It's for everyone. If you want to get smarter about football, you got to read Mark's stuff. He joins us now. Mark, good to see you, my friend. Thanks for joining me.
Of course, anytime.
So let's start off with the offensive line moves, which we get a little bit more insight on today. Multiple reporters saying it within kind of the tweet, the post that Andrew Wiley's contract has been restructured. They're saying, oh, he's going to become the backup, or maybe he can play some guard, but Brandon Coleman's going to become the right tackle for this team in lieu of the Laremy Tunsil trade. What do you make of his ability to play right tackle based off what you saw from him at left tackle last year? Because he did play left guard in college. He did play a little right guard in college, not a ton, but a little. He's actually never played right tackle before, unless he played it some in high school. So what do you think about his ability to potentially make that transition?
I think the potential is there. The raw traits that were there last year to say he could potentially play left tackle still apply now to saying he could play right tackle. He's athletic. He's got quick enough feet that he can handle that part of the game. I think the main issue for him last year was how he dealt with the different techniques, the hand fighting techniques, and he was a little bit. He only really had one or two moves to counter people. He would rely a little bit too much on a two-handed punch, which would see him lunge at people, and that would get him off balance, and the good rushers can take advantage of that. Or it would be he had a nice hand flash technique, but when guys started to catch on that he was basically one of those two moves, they countered it pretty quickly, and that's why he ended up needing so much help. So with a full off-season now where he can get a lot of work in on learning a little bit more individual hand usage and some more techniques to have in the bank to go to throughout a game, then perhaps he can survive a little bit better at tackle. Because as I say, more often than not, the reasons guys don't survive at tackle is they don't have quick enough feet to handle the speed guys, or they don't have a good arm length to handle the length that you can get outside with those monsters that play on the edge. But he has both of those things. So there's potential for him to fit a right tackle. I do think it could potentially end up being a situation where like we saw back in, what was it, 2015 when Brandon Scherff was drafted. And it was, yeah, he's going to be our starting right tackle. And then about 2 days into OTA, it was, okay, he's our right guard now. And Morgan Moses is our right tackle. So that could easily be the situation. I think it's very early in the offseason to say he's definitely going to be the right tackle. But I see the upside in trying him there first and at least seeing if he can survive at tackle. And then if not, you always have the fallback of kicking him inside the guard.
Yeah, because I feel like the other thing that he struggled with at times is kind of just the amount of space that you have to deal with at tackle, where, you know, he had trouble kind of setting on the midline. He'd overset, he'd underset. And you just don't have to deal with that inside because there's not enough space. You're like your physical traits can truly take over, which is why so many people think he can be such a good guard. How, like, I guess the question I would ask is, like, left to right, whether it's the quality of rusher, how guys approach rushing a blind side versus a front side. Is there anything about right tackle? Because I think a lot of people just are like, oh, right tackle, it's just the less good tackle for whatever reason. But so many of the same things still apply. And a lot of these rushers now line up on both sides. There are elite pass rushers. TJ Watt typically lines up over the right tackle, for instance. So what, like, is there anything about right tackle specifically other than maybe he likes the footwork better? It just suits him better on that side, which we won't know, that gives you any particular hope on that side compared to kicking him inside to guard?
I think it's more just you're a little bit more protected. Teams still, like, if he does get beat, you know, Jaden Daniels can at least has a better peripheral vision of his right side compared to his blind side. So that would be the where I feel a little bit more secure in trying him out there than left tackle. And I think given that they have Laramie Tunsil a left tackle now and they can trust him on an island, I think they can still provide the help that Coleman got a lot last year with the extra chip help or sliding the line his way. And he did well with that help. And I mean, a lot of tackles probably would do well with that level of help that he got. But the issue for them last year was they had Wiley and Coleman both needing that level of help. And that meant that they only had 3 receivers running routes most of the time. And the other guys were chipping and going to the flat. So by getting Tunsil, you free up one of those chippers to go and run an actual route. So you get 4 receivers out running routes. And you can still keep someone in to chip. And you can still slide the line to just one side to help out Coleman on the right side. So I think they have some protection built into him playing right tackle because they have Tunsil that they can trust on the left side. So, yeah, the biggest question is going to be, can he adjust to doing everything backwards, where coming out of his stance the wrong way effectively compared to what he's been doing? And maybe he struggles with that. Maybe it all clicks a little bit better for him. Who knows? But I think in terms of technique and stuff, it's not too dissimilar. It's just the blind side effect of it is, you know, Jaden's pretty aware of those things coming off his blind side, but you'd still would rather him have that vision of it and being able to see that guy coming a little bit better. And we saw that a couple times last year. I'm thinking of that touchdown to win the Bengals game where he slid the protection to his left and let the free rusher come off his right side because he could see that better, and then threw the touchdown to Terry over the top of it. So that's the kind of thing you're looking for, is for him to just be able to have that a little bit more awareness on the right side of if a blown block happens.
Mark Bullock, you can read his Substack, of course, formerly worked for the Washington Post and the Athletic. Now does a great job with doing his own thing with the Substack, and he's got all kinds of diagrams. And you know, I feel like I'm explaining things in a very silly way. I don't know what better way to do diagrams. He's got play designs. He's got you know,
cut-ups,
drawings,
all 22
cut ups. That's the word I'm looking for, Mark. Cut up. Yeah. He's got film cut ups. That's the football term. Got him in the middle of the offseason. Ask me about a signing bonus. I can do your math for you. To ask me to watch tape, and I'm out of my realm all of a sudden. You have watched the tape on Laramie Tunsil, though. There's a lot of yapping about Laramie Tunsil and what happened in Houston last year. When you flip on the tape and do your cut-ups, what do we see from Laramie Tunsil, the football player, going into his age 31, 32 season?
Really good. Really, really good.
Excellent. All right. Yeah. That's what we've been waiting to hear.
Yeah, that's top quality analysis there. He is really fun to watch. He's so smooth and so efficient with his feet. There's no wasted movement. He's not He doesn't have these big overstrides and these kicks, massive kick slides. It's just very smooth and efficient, quickly up and down. He gets a lot of width and a lot of depth on his drops very easily. And because of that, he can cut off just about any speed rusher, and he knows that he can cut off any speed rusher. So he also uses that to his advantage to help the left guard quite a lot. There was quite a few examples last season where whoever was playing left guard, and they rotated guys a lot in Houston because that O-line was terrible, but you quite often see him holding his spot next to the guard, pointing out a linebacker blitzing as the play was happening, and he'd stick out a hand and secure that B gap to help the guard get the block secure before he could then just transition outside and pick up the edge rusher, because he knows he has quick enough feet. But it's not just the good feet. He's got great hands, good hand placement, good hand technique as well. We talked about Coleman having that kind of relying on that two-handed punch. Tunsil is very good with individual hand usage. You always see him, he'll strike with his outside hand, but he's always got his inside hand ready to replace it if that outside hand gets knocked down. And because of that, he's always really well balanced and just very, very hard to get by. And that makes him a very, very good pass protector.
What about the run game though? Cause that's the other area with him where it's like, we know he's an elite pass protector, if not the best one in football. Where's the run game blocking out for him? Where are the strengths? Where are the weaknesses?
I think it's better than people think it is. People make out that he's this elite pass protector and terrible run blocker. He's not a terrible run blocker. He's very athletic in the run game. And the Texans last year had Bobby Slowick as their OC, and that comes from that Shanahan tree, that wide zone run scheme. And he was really good. Like he could cut off the backside three tech very easily. He could climb up to the backside linebacker on the backside of runs and cut those guys off as well, which you don't see a lot of. You see guys like Trent Williams doing it, but you don't see most normal left tackles.
That's
doing
such a funny phrase. Guys like Trent Williams. You see Trent Williams do it. There's nobody else like Trent Williams. He's one of one.
Yeah, that's true. But you see the elite guys do it, but you don't. He makes it look so easy because, again, he's such a smooth, fluid athlete. He's really athletic. Now, the one thing you didn't see him do too often was pull. And obviously in this offense, they run a lot of that GT counter where both the guard and the tackle pull. And so we didn't see how he did that, but you could see a lot of him blocking on screens where they'd run those quick screens to the flat or those running back screens. And Tunsil was often the guy trying to get out in front of them. And the Texans often actually did some of those rare screens that Kyle used to ask Trent to do, where they'd fake a run to the right side and they'd have Trent run from the hash marks all the way out to the numbers to make a block on the edge to block the corner on a receiver screen. And Tunsil did the exact same thing. I saw him do that in one game as well. So he's a pretty good athlete, and I think he shouldn't have any issues doing any of the pull stuff. So I think he'll be a pretty good fit. Again, you do have to – there is some projection in terms of how they're going to run because they tend to run more gap-based run schemes. So there is a little bit of projection there, but I don't see any reason why he couldn't do it. He's big enough, he's powerful enough, he's quick enough and athletic enough. So I don't see any reason why he'd have any issues in the run game either.
Mark Bullock with us here on the Hoffman Show, Commanders analyst who has a great Substack. Just markbullock.substack.com if you want to check it out. So you also watched the tape on Javon Kinlaw, who is a very interesting player, super high upside. Clearly, the people that have been around him love the guy. You know, Adam brings him back. Robert Saleh had him in New York after coaching him in San Francisco. Daryl Tapp was with him in San Francisco as the assistant D-line coach. He brings him here along with Adam to now that DT is the D-line coach here. So the character seems really high, which seems like a common thread throughout these guys. But when you look at the player, and you hear Dan Quinn saying in offseason stuff, like, we might look at some guys that we see in different roles than they've played. Is Javon Kinlaw kind of guy that you think fits that mold, that you could take the traits that you see on film and transfer it more effectively to another role or another position within what the Commanders showed last year that they want to do with their D-line?
Yeah, I think so. And I think a lot of people have started to catch on to this idea of playing him as that kind of heavy defensive end or Some people are calling it the elephant end.
Going back to what Pete Carroll and them called it in Seattle back in the day.
Yeah. And I certainly could see him doing that. I do wonder if he'd be disciplined enough on the edge to do that. I think that was one of the big things I took away, was there was a bit of a discipline issue in terms of keeping his gap. The thing with him is that he's so big, so athletic, so quick, and so strong that if everything clicks, he just runs guys over and turns up in the backfield and makes this amazing play. But if things don't click, he ends up getting washed out of gaps very easily. And for most of his career, it's been a case of things haven't clicked very well for him. And so he ends up getting knocked out of his gap more often than not. Last year, he was getting more consistent. So I think they'll need to help with some technique stuff, because he's so big and so strong. There was a couple of double teams that Buffalo ran on him, and Buffalo have a big offensive line. They have that guard Osiris Torrance that's like 350 pounds, and they were double teaming with Torrance and the right tackle on him, and he just kind of stood upright, which you don't teach guys to do. You want them to stay low and pad level and try to attack the block and split the double team. And Kinlaw just kind of stood upright and was like, "You guys can't move me. I'm too strong." And he just held the point of attack. And it's like, that's insane that he's able to do that. I'd love to see him do that consistently, and he doesn't. But it shows that there is a player in there. And I think the big thing with him is that Dan Quinn and Adam Peters have always talked about finding a guy's superpower and letting them do that thing over and over again. And I think that's what they're hoping to be able to do with Kinlaw, is take away all the other stuff of, can you do this? Can you do that? We need to fix this and fix that. It's okay. You are a big, strong, physical, and fast human being. Let's let you do that as often as we can, and let's let you be disruptive. Whether that's as this heavy end, elephant end, whatever you want to call it, I'm not sure. I'm not necessarily convinced of that. I kind of wonder whether last year they kind of did it a bit with Johnny Newton when they did those three-man fronts with Allen, Payne, and Newton. They put Newton at nose tackle, and they used his quickness to beat those centers inside. The Jets kind of did that with Kinlaw at times last year, where they played him as a one technique, as a nose tackle, and his power and his length was just too strong for any center to handle, and he could dominate centers that way. So I kind of wonder if maybe the answer is they kick him more inside rather than out to the edge. But I think they have that flexibility where you have those three-man fronts with Payne, Newton, and Kinlaw now, where you probably have Armstrong as one edge. And then if you want to, you can slide the line across and you can bring Luvu down as the other edge and kind of have it as a fake five-man front. Or you can just have one of those guys play as kind of heavy end, as we talked about. So I think it gives them some flexibility to do a lot of things with that defensive line. So the contract was maybe more expensive than you would think. And I don't love that contract for what he has been, but I think they're paying for what they think is an ascending player and one that they think they can get more out of.
If a dude's going to play 600 snaps at defensive tackle, like that's what they cost now. It's crazy because the cap has gone up, but it should be what they cost. But then again, considering what he's been, I do wonder if how much of a market there really was. But it takes one other team to drive up a market. That's all you need. And Adam Peters clearly thought it was worth it. And based off the other money that they have available, it's not hurting them. So I don't mind it. I think that also a point that should be raised here, and then I want to ask you about Will Harris as the last guy that we'll talk about. But with Dietrich Wise coming in and Eddie Goldman coming in, two other bigger bodies for their position, like it does feel like they are planning to have a lot more versatility. Like they have options to play basically every kind of front. Now with Goldman as a guy who can play a true nose tackle, a true shade, Kinlaw is this faster, twitchier version of that. Like, so there's some interesting options that are going to be really fun that I'm sure you'll be spending plenty of time writing about if they come to fruition during the season. Last guy is Will Harris, who as of right now is going to be the starting safety opposite of Quan Martin, replaces Jeremy Chinn. Really interesting player. Speaking of versatility, super versatile, lines up everywhere. What do you like about him? What are the concern points for a guy that played pretty darn well in New Orleans last year?
Yeah, that versatility really stands out. I put a post up on my Substack this morning or Thursday morning at time of recording, that he there was a three-play sequence in Dallas where against the Cowboys this past season, where at one point he lined up as the deep safety and he broke up a pass on it. Everyone's probably seen that highlight where he runs from the middle of the field and he hits CD Lamb in the end zone and on the sideline on a fade and breaks up that pass. Another play, he's playing over the slot and covers CD Lamb on a corner route. It's kind of it's a 4/3 coverage, so it's not true man coverage, but he matches up on Lamb in the end and covers him on a corner route really well, playing the slot. And then later on, he's playing as a dime linebacker in the box and matches a tight end running up the seam. So he can do a lot. He can line up in a lot of different roles. He can wear a lot of different hats, kind of like how they envisioned with Jeremy Chinn last year. And Chinn didn't end up playing all the roles that I think they would have liked because they ended up having to play him a little bit more deep to kind of cover the corners a little bit at the start of the year. But they started to get towards that more down the stretch and Chinn started playing a little bit better. And I think they will probably try to slot him in that role. I think the thing that he, in my opinion, does best is match up against tight ends, whether it's kind of match coverages or man-to-man straight up. He does a pretty good job staying with tight ends. Now, he does get beat from time to time. Zach Ertz got him on a third down against the Saints late in the red zone last year, running one of those little quick seams, breaking inside. Zach Ertz got him on that. But he generally speaking, does pretty well. And if you're going to play a lot of man coverage, you need a guy that can match up on tight ends. So I think that's kind of where they'll see him. He fits the run pretty well. If you're going to have a safety down in the box matching tight ends or playing dime linebacker matching running backs, you need to be able to play the run. He plays that pretty well. The biggest concern I have on him is he tends to struggle with misdirection. And a play I broke down on my Substack in that post this morning was it was against the Packers. They ran a jet sweep at him, and they ran quite a few jet sweeps at him in that game. And he was part of a two deep safety look, and they ran the sweep to his side. And he ended up charging down to the box because he still thought it was a run play. And the only reason he stopped, the receiver had already got out towards the numbers from the jet sweep. So he was almost at the sideline, and Harris was still charging towards the line of scrimmage thinking it was a run inside. And the only reason he stopped was because the corner that was trailing the receiver on the jet sweep ran straight across his face, and he realized, oh, that ball's not in the backfield. It's way out there. And they nearly gave up a touchdown because of it. The corner managed to save it at the one, but they still picked up like 20 yards on that play. And they ran quite a few of those jet sweeps at him because he was not great when he was playing from deep, diagnosing those misdirection plays. And that came up quite a few times that I watched him. And so that was the one weakness. I wouldn't necessarily love him playing deep all the time. I think in obvious passing situations, he can handle coverage back there fine. It's when you have the misdirection of, is it a run, is it a pass, play action kind of thing on first and second down. And Washington did do that a fair few times last year where they played with two deep safeties and then they rotate one down at the snap. So that is maybe a little concern, but perhaps there's another safety signing or draft pick that could fit in and Harris plays more of a dime linebacker role. I'm sure we'll see as this offseason evolves. I don't think they're done yet by any means, but
say, you mean that they're allowed to still sign players?
Here we are day after the
league year opens. Draft is still whatever away. The team's not done yet. No, that totally makes sense. And I think they did a really good job. Logan and I were texting about this the other day and he made this point. So good. That Paulson guy, smart. They did a good job of packaging their safety stuff. And so whether it was Butler or Chinn or Kwan or whatever other versions of the DB combinations they saw last year, definitely very interesting to see what they do this year. And like Dominic Hampton's still floating around. Like, what is his role? So Jordan McGee, what's his role when you talk about the box players? So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how they put it all together. Mark will be writing about all of it at markbullock.substack.com. You can, again, go watch all the film cut-ups of him breaking down these guys in their previous spots and how he thinks they'll fit in beyond what he just said. He's going to watch a little bit more film here, too, and guys like Dierdrick Wise, who I think could actually be a much bigger part. That's kind of an underrated signing. Like, I think he's going to be a pretty heavy rotation player for them. It's really good in New England last year. Mark's going to write about those guys over the next couple of days as well, Jonathan Jones, etc. Mark, appreciate your time on the radio here, my friend. Take care, and talk to you soon.
Of course, anytime.
It's Mark Bullock with us here on the Hoffman Show. When we get back, more analysis from more smart people. Logan and I had a nice little chat this morning on Take Command. We actually did a live show, but if you're just getting in your car now, chances are you were stuck at your desk and missed it. So we're gonna play it for you, at least part of it. The rest you can check out in the podcast feed. But we're gonna give you some of Logan's breakdowns on Dietrich Wise, Jonathan Jones, and why he's very high on the players that Washington has brought in. Next.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
6 o'clock, Dave Johnson joins us here on the Hoffman Show. Not a good Wizards news day. They lost the Pistons the other night, but then today we learned Bilal Coulibaly's season is probably over, out 4 to 6 weeks with a hamstring issue. We'll see what's up with that with Dave. Dave will also share his memories of John Feinstein, who passed away today at the age of 69, a legendary sports writer. Again, tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. on the Junkies, John's old time slot that he used to always be on with them. You can listen to them reminisce about their times with Feinstein over the years. Right now, though, we are going to continue on with some analysis on the Commanders' free agent and off-season success here, or failures, or still in progress. Logan Paulson and I talked about 11 a.m. this morning. We actually were live, which is why you subscribe to Take Command in your podcast feed or on YouTube at the Team 980, at Craig Hoffman, because sometimes when news is happening, we might just pop up. Be live. You never know. But in case you're like, yeah, that's a great idea in theory, or maybe I saw the alert, but I was in a meeting and I couldn't just like, hey guys, sorry, Take Command's on. You know, we're going to give you the best of here on the radio as well. So, Logan, on some of the key signings that have been made, but if anything winds up sounding dated here, it was because it's,
I don't know, 6 hours ago at this point, and Commanders have re-signed a couple of folks along the way. But here is Logan and I talking about Dietrich Wise, Jonathan Jones, Will Harris, and more. The newest Commanders on Take Command. To me, the theme of the guys that they've signed is they're going after the big bodies. And you and I talked about this last training camp, where we walked out on the practice field and we're like, that's an Adam Peters guy. That's an Adam Peters guy. That's an Adam Peters guy. Because they were all the big dudes. And between Kinlaw, who's 6'5", 320, Eddie Goldman, who they signed, the nose tackle, played most of his career with the Bears, last year with the Falcons. He's 6'5", like 330. He's a mountain of a man. You played with him in Chicago. And then late last night, they signed Dietrich Wise, who was a 5-sack guy last year for the Patriots, played very well for them for quite a while, 6'5", or 280-pound defensive end. It seems like they are, I don't know how great of run players these guys are, but at the very least, they're going to have some bulk this year to, I think, not have the line of scrimmage moved in the way it was in the past.
Yeah, and I think you're just getting players who, again, like one of the big weaknesses for the Commanders, I think, was, you know, like run defense. So I think when you go out and sign a guy like Goldman, like that's like his superpower. When you watch his film, he's a big guy, but he's got enough twitch and enough burst to kind of create some knot back. He understands kind of what it takes to sit and split a double team, which is extremely important. And because of the athletic upside of a guy of his size, he can penetrate a little bit. And so I do think when you're looking for a guy that maybe can keep Bobby Wagner clean, keep Frankie Louvu clean, keep that other kind of big Buffalo nickel safety type player clean in the box, like he's going to do that, but he also has some playmaking upside. Now, you know, he's 30 years old or whatever he is, like he's not in his prime any longer, but he still can throw that pitch at a very high level, and I think that's extremely important. When you look at Wise, man, he's been honestly one of my favorite players to watch over the last probably 5 years in the NFL. He is a big dude like you were talking about. He's okay against the run, but as like a stand-up defensive end, I think he does a little bit better. He can put his hand in the dirt, but he also has some pass rush juice. He has some ability to kind of like do the dance of a pass rusher. And to me, he's like a perfect replacement to Cleveland Farrell. And I actually think he's a little bit more of a competent football player, right? So when you're in this four down front, you get a guy who's just slightly more aware, has a little bit more pass rush upside, kind of understands when to throw those different moves. You can loop him on a stunt. He's got a good feel for getting after the passer. And so I think adding those two pieces are just two solid football players, right? Two really solid high floor football players that on a 1 year deal, what are they, like $6 million each, something like that. Just
yeah. Wise was 5 million. I think Goldman's right around the same, 5 or 6.
Yeah. So that, to me, that's a perfect fit, right? They're guys that are, they're good pros. They elevate your defense right now. They help you in areas that you were struggling with last year. And they just bring a level of consistency that you need on the defensive side of the football. Like we talked about when we were kind of doing the defensive review of how the defense played over the course of last season. Then you look at Kinlaw and, you know, I was going through his film and kind of watching plays, and is he an up and down player? Yeah, but he does have something very unique, something that's you can't coach. And that's the physical explosiveness and power. And if you can harness that and get it going in the right direction, that could really, really be a nice piece. And I think you look at like the things you talked about, like Daryl Tapp knows him, Adam Peters knows him, like Jeff Ulbrich and Robert Sala, who Dan Quinn knows really, really well, probably endorsed him at a high level. So they understand exactly what they're getting here. And when you watch the highs of Kinlaw, you're like, man, this guy could be something extremely special. Now, there's inconsistency to his play, but I look at that and I say, like, if you get him in the right role, you mentioned him maybe playing that big power end in this defense, potentially. We don't know for sure, but that's something on the table. And I think about him matching up with a tackle on the open side edge and him just denting edges, being physical, using his length and size and speed. Like, that is a devastating proposition. Then you can bump him inside on third down and just say, hey, man, pin your ears back and go get it. And I'm like, dude, That's exciting. Now, a lot of things have to fall in place for that, but I think that's why you trust Daryl Tapp, you trust Ryan Kerrigan to maximize somebody who, you know, like there's that, what is it, the Bill Parcells, like the world principle. There's only a couple people on the planet Earth that look and move like Kinlaw. And I can honestly say that he's a very unique player in that regard. And I think fans will fall in love with him the first second he walks on the field at training camp because of that size frame stuff. But if you get him, that's a plus player with two players in the front that are very, very solid. You know, Goldman and Wise are very, very solid players. And like, that sounds like I may be being pejorative towards them, but they're good. They're just good NFL football players that make your team and raise the floor of the defense just from these signings. So I love all of these signings. I love the upside play of Kinlaw, but I love the floor that Wise and Goldman present.
Yeah. And I think it's important to point out, like, these guys are all going to be rotation players. Like, none of these guys are going to be relied upon to play 900 snaps. Like, these are all 400 to 600 snap guys that hopefully can play their best on a very consistent basis because they are going to be fresh all the time. And like, Goldman's going to be in a rotation with Kinlaw and Newton and Payne and maybe another young guy. And then on the edge, you have Wise, you have Armstrong, and then they'll probably, you know, Kinlaw maybe is out there some too, Jean-Baptiste, and then they probably sign another guy or two. And, or that could be their first round pick is an edge in the draft. Obviously, I think a lot of people, I would say myself included, hope that that is one of the directions that is available to them at the 29th pick or the 30 whatever pick if they can trade back and recoup some draft capital. So I think that that's an important thing to point out. The other thing about Kinlaw specifically, because he's the only guy that they've gone multi-year on here, which is something I do want to talk about in a second. We got a really good question in the YouTube chat kind of about this. But $15 million a year for Javon Kinlaw is the going rate for a rotational starting caliber defensive piece, right? A guy who's kind of that fringe starter, like high-end backup, low-end starter guy. And because of the way the cap has gone, raising $20 million a year the last 2 years, this is the equivalent to like an $11 million a year deal 2 years ago. Literally 2 years ago, if you look at cap percentage. So if I told you that they signed Javon Kinlaw to an $11 million deal per year, I don't think anyone blinks twice. So like, yeah, okay. Like that's what happens for veteran backups at an expensive position. And realistically, we just have to get our brains around the fact that the cap has gone up and you know, these guys are just going to be a little bit more expensive, but it's not actually hurting the team in any kind of way. And in that way, stop counting other people's money. Good for Javon Kinlaw. Hope that he in his generational wealth or whatever charities he supports or whatever, get that money goes to good uses. So at the end of the day, like I think that, and also they've got plenty of cap space to do whatever else they want. So this is not inhibiting them in any kind of way. And I think what it's done is provided them with an even more solid floor. If you think like, why is this an upgrade over Furl, et cetera, et cetera. They still have to probably find that other edge piece and whether that's re-signing Fowler or a couple other guys that we can talk about. But they've also, I think, given themselves some more versatility. Like they tried to do some of the odd spacing stuff last year. And they did it. They did some funky stuff. And a lot of teams are doing this, right? They play like kind of even spacing in an odd front where they just tack another guy on the end of the line of scrimmage. But now if they wanted to play a true like 3-4 for whatever reason, they like the matchups, you know, they think another team's runs really struggle against those fronts. Like Eddie Goldman being a true nose or a guy that can play a true shade provides you a different option. And for a defense that's super multiple, Logan, I think that's pretty exciting.
No, I do think that's that'll be interesting to see what they do. And I think that's one of the things I love your analogy you made earlier about the kind of evaluating picture that's being drawn. They could do that. Yeah. And we talked about how they have that install in where they can, you know, play a 3-4. But I also think like Goldman would be great playing a shade. Like he would be great just playing like in a 4-down front, playing a shade, playing off the center's shoulder, and he'd probably be more effective there. And then you get Payne playing a true 3 technique or Johnny Newton playing a true 3 technique where they can penetrate and be aggressive because you've got this guy who can eat that front side double, or you've got Kinlaw playing the end and he can really dent that edge down and really collapse that thing in and force them back into, you know, Goldman, Payne, Newton on the interior. So I do think there is, you know, I think there's a lot of stuff they can do. And I think that's one of the exciting parts about this point of the season is I like the football players they signed. I like the roles they fit. I like the, when I watch the film, I like what they're about. You know, I like the measurables. That's great. But I also just like when you watch Wise, man, you see a guy who loves ball. He's physical. He's aggressive. He's passionate. He's energetic. He's animated. Like that's what I want this team to be. When I watch Kinlaw, I see an explosion of athletic potential. And so now it's like, where does it all fit? How does it all come together? Yeah. Could it be a 3-4 like we talked about when we did that 3-4 show? Absolutely. Maybe it's a more four, maybe it's a 4-down front, or maybe it's a true under with a Sam on the ball. Like who knows right. what this sucker looks like, but they got guys, they got football players. And that makes me confident that they can kind of get into whatever they need to maximize this group and kind of present the best defense moving forward. And I think that's the other thing. Like last year there was, you know, like what are they doing? Like how's this feels very clear. It's like we're going to get guys that are physical, that have some pass rush upside, that fill in some of our gaps. You know, like I think about Carl Davis last year, how he's kind of this late signing to help kind of manage some of the stopping the run issues that the defense was having. Like Goldman, like that's his thing. Like that's what he's been doing since he came into the NFL. And when you watch his film, it shows up as a guy that not only can stop the run, but can move laterally down the line of scrimmage at a high level. So I look at this and I say, yeah, like they can do whatever you need them to do, whatever you want them to do. But I do think like they've got good football players, and that makes that possible.
For sure. And speaking of versatility, their back end signings as well. Like those are guys that have some of that, and including one of Dietrich Wise's former teammates in New England and Jonathan Jones. And if you can play for Belichick, you can do anything.
Yeah.
Because and those are two of Belichick's favorite guys because of the versatility they did bring. And so Jonathan Jones on the back end corner, who played a lot of slot early in his career, moved outside the past couple of years. His worst year was probably last year, but like he went from playing in a Bill Belichick defense to Gerard Mayo and whatever they were doing in New England, which was generally a disaster last year, which is why that staff is no longer there. So I, like, yes, he is getting older. Yes, he is on the wrong side of the age cliff for a corner, but he's an intriguing piece. And apparently he's a stand-up, like A-plus dude. And I think having that kind of guy who's a little bit older in a room with Marshawn Lattimore to where Mikey Sainer still isn't necessarily having to be to take the full burden of the leadership responsibility. And by the way, as you're grooming your future leaders, like we talked about with a guy like Marcus or whoever else on offense to kind of show Jaden the way, having another example in the room for Mikey is fantastic in terms of his long-term growth and development. I love the Jonathan Jones signing for those reasons. I don't know if he can play or not, and that is something that we should definitely talk about. But I'll also tack on to talk about in this conversation, Logan, for you is Will Harris, who played super versatile last year in New Orleans. I mean, this dude would line up at free safety, line up at strong safety, line up in the box. He'd line up in the slot. He lined up, you know, depending on some certain alignments they had, he'd be at an outside corner, typically like more kind of clamped in. He's not like on an island outside, but every once in a while. So they get two more guys that can play a whole ton of places in this defense. And it just screams like, again, they want to have options. They want to be versatile. And then it's a matter of putting the guys in the best positions possible to execute.
Yeah. So I think Jonathan Jones is really interesting, especially because the contract value, what was it? 1 for 5.5.
Yeah. It's 1 for 5.5, another million potential in incentives could get up to 6.5.
And he feels like he's going to be a kind of rotational backup type guy, kind of like your Michael Davis analogous, right? Kind of like your replacement for Benjamin St. Juice, a guy that can play the slot if you have to, can play outside if you need him to. And when I go back and watch his key plays from last year, like I think he's got a lot of things that he does really well. First off, he's crazy explosive and twitchy. Like all those kind of like movement skills you want from a corner, he still has that at a high level. I think he tracks the football. And I think he plays the football in the air at a really high level. And so what I mean by that is like I think everyone's familiar with St. Juice and kind of how the ball would be in the air. And it's like he's a little bit lost. Like Jones doesn't have that, right? He's able, even though he's a smaller guy, he's able to play the hands, track the football. He gets a lot of batted balls. He has a fair amount of interceptions in his career. It's interesting because he is, to me, more of a slot player, you know, slot special teams type guy. And maybe that's the role he falls into here, kind of as your punt returner. He played a couple snaps for on offense early in his career, getting reverses and things like that. He's very, very explosive.
I think it was a 4-3-3 guy coming out. And again, that was a long time ago, but like 4-3-3, even if you're slow, is like 4-4 now. And I would give a lot to run a 4-4.
Yeah, no doubt. And so when I look at this, I say to myself, like, he's basically your swing secondary player for the outside guys in the nickel. And that's what you want. You want a guy who's a good, competent football player, right? And I'm saying this term a lot, but I feel that way about Goldman. I feel that way about Wise. I feel that way about Jones. Like if you need it, like if Sanders still goes out or there's a package where he's playing the nickel, I feel very comfortable putting Jones on the perimeter and having matchup. Now, is he going to get beat by bigger wide receivers on occasion? Absolutely. Like when you watch the Jets game, like they throw a couple of jump balls to Mike Williams and Mike Williams just kind of gets over top. But I will say he's a competitive son of a gun because on this, there's a drive where they throw a jump ball, they throw an in, and it looks like they're picking on him a little bit. They get down the red zone, they throw a fade to him, and I'll be darned if Jones doesn't punch that thing out and prevent the touchdown and it leads to a field goal. So he's a competitive, competent football player. Are there limitations to his game? Yes. Like that's why he's on a 1-year, $6 million deal, right? Because he's not a perfect player. He's a little bit older. He's a little bit undersized, but I think he's going to be a very great value add. And I think about some of the limitations that Michael Davis and St. Juice had, and I think he's a significant upgrade over both of those players, right? So I think that's ultimately what you're looking at here. And we'll see what they do at the nickel spot. Maybe he ends up doing that, or maybe Will Harris does that. But I like that they got a guy who's played a lot of ball, got a lot of experience, and has the skill to play significant minutes if you need him to.
I also wonder if they just say, Mikey, you did such a good job outside last year, we're going to keep you there. Like, if Jones is a slot guy, like, you can, if I guess this is a good point to make, right? If the free agency is about setting the floor, if the worst case scenario is that Mike Sanders still plays outside again and Jonathan Jones is your nickel and then Marshawn's on the other side, like, that's not a bad worst case scenario. You can mess with that. And then hopefully you find a corner in the draft, whether it's first, second round, whatever, who can emerge and be like, actually, I'm good enough to play right away. I'm good enough to start. I'm going to go outside. Mikey, you get to kick back inside. And then Jonathan Jones is your dime corner slash depth piece. And you can do some stuff with him. Or maybe he plays a little bit of safety and some three safety set. Like, he's a versatile and smart enough and athletic enough dude that you can do some different stuff with him. Same with Mikey. Like, those two pieces become, I don't want to say interchangeable, because like, Mikey's a young guy who's here for the future. But like, for 2025, they're somewhat interchangeable pieces. And so I think that's an exciting thing to say, like, okay, if free agency is about establishing the floor, this guy's definitely not a bad floor to have. I think Harris is an even better player than that. Like, I started watching some of his tape the other day. Dude, I really like what I saw from him in New Orleans. Like, he's physical. He seems to have pretty good instincts in coverage. His first play of the year last year, Bryce Young throws one right to him. So I don't know how much ball skills are on display for a ball that hits you right in the chest, but like, he does have a pick on the first play of the season last year. That was a fun first snap to watch. And, you know, considering Chin is gone, now Defoe's gone, he signs in Buffalo. I think they got a starting caliber guy at a pretty decent price. In fact, he's half the cost of Jeremy Chin. And not that Chin might not be a little better. I don't know. He's double the player that Will Harris is. So I think that's a good signing as well.
Yeah, and I kind of put them both in similar buckets. Like, I like Will Harris as well, but he kind of is that box kind of big nickel. He can play some safety stuff. I don't know if you love him playing safety, but is a little bit better in coverage than Chin. Like, he does a lot of really good stuff. And I put him in a similar bucket to Jonathan Jones. Like I think Will Harris is probably more like starter or role player ready in some of those packages that Chin was in last year. But I do think that, you know, like you said, he takes good angles with the ball. He's physical on tackles. He understands kind of where to fit when he's playing that nickel role. Is he the best in man coverage? No, but is he serviceable? Yeah. Like, is he always going to be a matchup you're always kind of like wringing your hands about a little bit? Yeah, but it's really hard to find elite coverage players that can play the box and play high level man coverage. And I think the interesting thing when you were talking, I had this thought, both of these players are good players, and talk about setting the floor. Like, shoot, you feel like Will Harris was great last year for New Orleans, and so was, to a certain extent, Jonathan Jones. Like, they were really good floor players for a team. But also now, if you were to draft a corner, you could draft, let's say you draft a nickel player, you know, like the kid from Texas or the kid from Georgia, Starks, right? They could come in and play this nickel role, and then Jones all of a sudden can back up on the perimeter. Or Will Harris is kind of the safety, but you draft, you know, maybe a guy that fits your archetype a little bit more, like the guy I just watched. I don't think the Commanders are going to select him, but the safety from Iowa State, who's 6'3", he's 220, a little bit bigger body, a little bit more range. Maybe you draft him for some upside, but you do have great floors here already. So let's say neither one of those players are ready at the gate. You've got really excellent football players. And I think ultimately that's what I feel good about. And I'm going to keep reiterating this point, is that both of these guys are excellent, like really, like, and excellent by NFL standards. Cause I think everyone thinks excellent is like, you know, the top tier of the market, right? Oh, these guys are tremendous. These guys are good football players, right? They can play teams. They can do a lot of different stuff. They play the game the way you're supposed to play it. And so if that's your floor, you feel great about it. Then you have the flexibility to be like, hey, we can upgrade with this piece, or we can upgrade with this piece. Or maybe Hamilton makes a jump this offseason. We feel comfortable putting him in this Buffalo. Like, those are all on the table here. But I think it leads to a better competition and a more fleshed out group from a talent. And not even a talent standpoint, because I think, you know, St. Juice is talented, but just better football players, right? Guys that have a better feel for the game. Both these guys fit that bill.
Better up here. Like, these are guys, like, they have really gone, I think Nikki had this stat the other day, that like, the average age of these signings is 30. which scares you a little bit, I think, because, and this has pained me all free agency long, to be like, oh my God, these old guys who are five-ish years younger than me at this point in my life, and I'm sure it pains you even more as someone who's a couple years older and has retired from the NFL and actually played 10 years in the league. It's not like you had a short career. But like, that's a little old for NFL, but like, these guys are also at the tail end, or maybe depending on the position and the guy, in the middle of their primes, and like, mentally, they're solid. Like, there's just going to be a intelligence to this football team that hopefully the physical skill sets are there, but they're not going to have like the confidence or the crises of confidence that you had with a Benjamin St. Juice last year.
Yeah. And I think that's the other thing that is really tough about the situation for Adam, is that you not only do you have to make sure the team is getting better, but you have to make sure the team is experienced enough to make a run in the playoffs if you have to. If everything works out, you kind of catch that lightning in the bottle again, you're making a run. Like, we need football players who are good enough and mature enough to handle that while also getting younger at the same time. So that's where it becomes extremely, extremely difficult. And we didn't really talk about this with the Laremy Tunsil thing, but like, I think there's a semi-awareness or an understanding of like, hey, we need picks this year. We're going to try and keep our five, as many picks as we can this year, because we know we need young developmental talent on the roster while also maintaining this high floor that we're talking about. So I think that's something that's kind of paradoxical about this group, is bringing in older guys that have some experience that can play football right now is extremely valuable for this group, but you also kind of need to say, hey, where are we getting younger? And I think that's where the Kinlaw thing is really interesting to me, because at 27 years old, he's still got a lot of runway here, and he can be a piece you can build around if he does figure it out.
Want more from Craig and Logan? Subscribe now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. More Hoffman Show next on the Team 980 and the free Odyssey app.